From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Robert Roberson's new date with death. The East Texas man, who many believe is innocent, is again set to be executed by the state of Texas.
What I ended up here, I lost my little girl and stuff, and then they accused me of it because I couldn't explain what happened to her, you know.
I'm ashamed that I was so focused on finding an offender and convicting someone that I did not see Robert.
We're not going to stop fighting for Robert. He cannot give up hope. This is a man who has suffered so much.
Support for this podcast of Texas Matters comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. By investing in local communities and rewarding policyholders for prioritizing safety, they are building a more resilient Texas. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, and with me in the studio to help break down the Robert Roberson story is TPR's Vice President of News, Dan Katz.
Robert Roberson, a name we've all gotten to know in the last few years. This is such a compelling but also deeply troubling story to unpack. There's a tragic tangled web that led to Roberson being arrested for the death of his 2-year-old daughter, Nikki, being found guilty and then sentenced to death, and then the ongoing legal fight to try to save him from the lethal injection.
Well, here's what's new in the Roberson case. He has a new death date, October 16th, 2025. That was issued earlier this month. And Roberson's attorneys, they're trying to get a new trial where they say the new evidence will prove his innocence.
And this is currently before the Texas Criminal Court of Appeals, and it's the first time that the courts will consider this evidence. And there are many medical experts who say that Nikki died from being ill, not by the hands of Roberson.
So we are going to roll out the evidence in this case, and there are some things to watch out for. Shaken baby syndrome, that's controversial. Also, Roberson has autism and an intellectual developmental disability.
Some say that Roberson was arrested and convicted because of his odd behavior connected to his autism.
And we've got to tell the story on how Roberson's case became a political flashpoint in the discussion about fairness of the Texas death penalty. It highlights a singular important question: can the state of Texas be trusted with the death penalty?
We'll get to that, but let's dig into the story of Robert Roberson. Dave, you've been covering his story for years, and you are one of the few reporters who was allowed to interview him on Texas Death Row. This is one of those stories where it's difficult to know where to start.
Yeah, it's really complicated, a lot of entry points, but let's go back to October 17th, 2024. That's the day that Roberson was supposed to die.
I'm here today to tell you all that Mr. Roberson did receive a stay. I had the opportunity to go back there to speak with him, and he was shocked, to say the least. He praised God, and he thanked his supporters.
That stay only came after a legal battle and a unique legal maneuver by a bipartisan group of state representatives who had investigated Roberson's case and determined that he was likely innocent.
Those lawmakers subpoenaed Roberson to testify before their House committee, and that date for his testimony was after his execution. So they argued that the Texas prison system couldn't kill him because of their oversight powers.
That was a one-time move. Since then, the Texas Supreme Court ruled that the subpoena was invalid, and Roberson should have been put to death. But nevertheless, his death warrant was invalid, and a new one needed to be issued.
And just last week, a new death warrant was granted after a hearing in Roberson's hometown of Palestine, Texas, Anderson County in East Texas.
It's not a freak occurrence in this state. We've had 200 people in this country exonerated from death rows because they've subsequently been found innocent. But if you can't get the evidence to be considered by a court, how are you ever going to get a new trial? And that's all. We're not asking for Robert to walk out into the sunset. We're asking for a new trial. And I just ask you to stay with us. We're not going to stop fighting for Robert. He cannot give up hope. This is a man who has suffered so much.
That was Gretchen Swin, Robertson's lead attorney, speaking on the steps of the Anderson County Courthouse after that hearing. And we're going to be hearing more from Swin later in the program.
Okay, I think we need to go back and give some more background on why Robertson was given the death penalty in the first place. Dave, let's listen to one of your old stories that aired in October of last year.
Robert Robertson is scheduled to be executed today by the state of Texas for a crime medical experts say never happened. Robertson was convicted of killing his 2-year-old daughter in a case that relied on a disputed diagnosis of shaken baby syndrome. Texas Public Radio's David Martin Davies reports.
In the early morning of January 31st, 2002, Robert Robertson entered an East Texas emergency room. His 2-year-old daughter, Nikki, was in his arms. She was limp, non-responsive. Her lips were blue. The hospital staff put Nikki on life support and tried to resuscitate her. And they called the police on Robertson. They thought they had a case of shaken baby syndrome on their hands. But testifying Wednesday to the Texas Legislative Committee on Jurisprudence, Dr. Roland Auer, a Canadian neurosurgeon who has testified in similar cases, said Nikki was not the victim of abuse.
Nikki died of consequences of pneumonia, cardiac arrest, and she was basically brain dead in a living body.
At that time, medical experts were told to watch out for shaken baby syndrome deaths. Auer said that medical diagnosis was wrong.
But what are you going to do when you see bleeding on the inside, but nothing on the outside? You got to make up some theory, and that's how shaking theory came about. And then it becomes a whodunit rather than a what happened.
The American Academy of Pediatrics says shaken baby syndrome, now called abusive head trauma, remains a significant cause of death and injury in children. The Academy recommends that pediatricians remain vigilant for the signs of abusive head trauma. Robertson is on the autism spectrum. The arresting officer said the fact that he displayed little emotion to the medical crisis and then the death of Nikki contributed to his being arrested for her murder. That arresting officer, Brian Wharton, told the Texas lawmakers Wednesday he is haunted by what happened to Robertson.
I'm ashamed that I was so focused on finding an offender and convicting someone that I did not see Robert.
Since Robertson's conviction and death sentence, new research shows that shaken baby syndrome is more complex than understood 20 years ago. Nevertheless, Robertson has been on Texas death row for over 22 years. Appeals to the courts to re-examine the new evidence have been rejected. Wharton says the appeals system was put in place with the understanding that sometimes there are bad convictions.
It's all pointless if nobody will admit we got it wrong.
I spoke to Robertson recently on Texas death row. He said he's accepting his fate. He's relying on his deep faith in God's will.
But I'm at peace if I have to go over there, you know. I don't want to go over there. Don't get me wrong.
Dave, when you first started reporting on Robertson, there was a lot of attention on the controversy of shaken baby syndrome. And there were a lot of people who didn't agree that it's junk science.
Just before Robertson was set to be executed, another man was exonerated for shaken baby syndrome.
That was the case of Andrew Wayne Rourke, very similar to Robertson. In 1997, Rourke was caring for his girlfriend's 13-month-old daughter when the child was found unconscious. And medical experts later identified her injuries as consistent with shaken baby syndrome, and Rourke was charged and convicted in March of 2000 of injury to a child, receiving a 35-year prison sentence. In October 2024, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals overturned his conviction, finding that modern medical and scientific understanding no longer supports that shaken baby hypothesis in this case. Rourke was released after serving about 24 years in prison.
So to preserve the conviction on Robertson, the Texas Attorney General's office has tried to say that this was not a shaken baby syndrome case, but that's not what the court records show.
And a juror who convicted Robertson in 2003, Terry Compton, testified during a hearing before the Texas House Committee on Criminal Jurisprudence on October 21st of 2024, said the jury's decision was based solely on evidence and arguments framed around shaken baby syndrome.
Everything that was presented to us was all about shaken baby syndrome. That is what our decision was based on.
So it would be fair to say, from your perspective as a juror, this case was about shaken baby syndrome.
That was the only thing that was discussed or told to us that it was about.
That's the only thing?
Only thing.
Were you told anything about this little girl, Nikki, being beaten?
No.
So you heard nothing about Nikki being beaten as an explanation for what you witnessed in the jury room?
No.
Her testimony provides critical insight into how limited the trial presentation was and discredits the argument that Nikki died from being beaten to death.
So, Dave, you've interviewed Roberson on death row just before he was due to be executed in 2024. What was he like?
Dan, as you know, I've interviewed multiple people on death row, and Roberson was different. He was confused about everything that was going on, and he does have autism and that developmental disability, but he did come across as a very gentle person. And I asked him why he thought he was on death row.
Because the way they said I acted distraught. They didn't know at the time I had autism spectrum, what do you want to call it? I didn't know nothing about autism before I got in here, got diagnosed.
Yeah, so they were saying that you weren't acting the way they want, they expect people to act.
Yeah, the way I acted, because I couldn't explain how did she get in that position. I told him I found out at the end of the bed, and that's the God's truth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first came there, because they called in the police department and stuff, and they suspected me, and just because I was acting, they thought I was acting strange or unusual, you know.
And I also asked him if he thought the Texas death penalty system was fair.
No, sir, because I think my belief is I think they should let God handle it, you know, because God just said let him have vengeance if they are guilty, you know. And because when the state of Texas does that, when they execute somebody or do something else and stuff, I think that's just like them murdering somebody, you know, killing somebody, you know. It's legalized murder.
So here we are again. So much evidence that Roberson committed no crime, yet the state is determined to put him to death. The death penalty is supposed to be reserved for the most extreme cases when there is zero doubt about guilt and the condemned is supposed to be so dangerous that he has to be put to death for the safety of society.
This raises questions for supporters of the death penalty in Texas, and that's the majority of the people in the state, according to opinion polling. How can you trust the capital punishment system when it refuses to look at the evidence and the science, and then it still moves forward with putting a man who appears to be innocent to death?
So the Robert Roberson case is just the stark example of how complicated the search for justice can be. You've got the evolving science, you've got these deeply personal stories, and the system's fallibility.
Dan, thanks for helping explain this intricate story.
You're welcome, and I know you'll stay on top of this developing story in the months ahead.
And to get the latest, I spoke with Roberson's lead attorney, Gretchen Swin.
The execution date was set over our objection, and the objection was based on the fact that there's an appeal pending before the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals with massive amounts of new evidence showing Robert's innocence. And so there is no legal or really moral reason to set an execution date when the highest court in the state is considering this appeal. So to try to have that date stayed, which means stopped, and allow the court to continue to deliberate.
So the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals has already taken up this case about Robert Roberson, because there's all this evidence that hasn't been considered yet. And because they're working through that, you're saying, hey, wait a second, why are you trying to execute this guy when there's still so much process to be done?
Exactly. And, you know, part of the problem we experience in the fall is that there was an execution date looming and all of our filings were being dismissed on procedural grounds without the court looking at the evidence. So finally, there was, you know, a filing in February asking the court to look at the merits, and it's been doing that. And so there's no reason to put this artificial pressure on the court to make them hurry up and, you know, resolve this. And it seems really to be more about a political maneuver than, you know, a sound legal basis.
What is the politics of this? Can you talk about that?
Well, all I can share is what I observe, which is shortly after Ken Paxton's office moved to take over the case, then a week later, they file a motion seeking an execution date at a time when that's completely unconventional because the appeal was pending. So it just looks like it's an attempt to sort of interfere or send signals that are untoward, in my view, and especially when we're talking about an extraordinarily complex case involving actual innocence.
So the Attorney General's office took over this case from the Anderson County District Attorney. Is that normal?
That is not normal. It is, you know, perfectly legitimate under Texas law for a district attorney to ask for the Attorney General's office to take over a case, usually before trial. And, you know, because they don't have the resources, they don't have the expertise. That is far more common. But the idea that years into litigation, you would ask the Attorney General's office, who has not been involved in the post-conviction litigation, to take over and then immediately seek an execution date, none of that is normal.
So when you're talking about there are political fingerprints on this case, that's a fingerprint, right?
That's a fingerprint, yeah. It, because none of it is conventional. One has to step back and say, what is going on here?
At the hearing that was held in Palestine, Texas, earlier this month, what happened there? Was there an opportunity to present any of this information?
The hearing last week, and it was before a new judge who was seemingly assigned back in February. They never alerted us. He was quite clear that he was not there to decide the merits, that he had no ability to do that under state law. And his position was, he used the word unfortunate, and it's unfortunate that he feels he has no choice but to set an execution date. We argued to the contrary, that he does have the discretion to reject this request, but he seemed to think that setting a date was necessary to get forward progress in the case. And that's just another, you know, super odd element here, that the idea that their pressure is being put on a court to make a decision when the problem before was that there was a shadow of an execution date and nothing was being looked at on the merits.
Robert Robertson was at that hearing before when they had done this. You know, this is not his first, unfortunately, this is not his first rodeo when it comes to having the execution date set. And he wasn't at the previous ones. What changed?
The last time they set an execution date, they wouldn't even let us inside the courthouse. There was no hearing. They just signed the piece of paper and sent me, you know, a death warrant. And that was another concerning bit of due process violation, because we had wanted to get in and at least make the argument that there was this other habeas application coming with yet more new evidence. And instead, there was no hearing. There was this summary granting of the state's request. This time, the judge made a point not only of giving us a hearing, which was very much appreciated, but also of getting Robert there. And I think it was very stressful on Robert because they had him decked out in hardware I've never even seen before. He was clearly sort of traumatized, but at least he got to be there and see what was being debated about his very fate.
Like he had like a bulletproof vest on and other things.
Yeah, I mean, he had some kind of like belly chain. He couldn't sit up straight. They wouldn't unshackle him. And I think they put a bulletproof vest on him, I think because there were some threatening things on. But I've never seen that before. As you may recall, he was supposed to come to the Capitol and be able to address questions for lawmakers, which is the reason his previous execution date got stayed. And then that too was scuttled by the Attorney General's office, which will add that to the concerning signs that this may have more to do with politics than with justice.
Right. So they told us, the world, the media, you, everyone, they told us that they couldn't allow someone on death row to leave the prison because of safety concerns, to go to Austin to testify, yet he was allowed to go to this hearing.
Well, it is somewhat, odd, and I don't think it was a good faith argument because routinely sheriff's offices work with the prison system and bring inmates to courtrooms and other places, medical facilities, every single day. And this is something they handle routinely. So the idea that Robert, who is the, one of the first graduates of the faith-based program, who is in a special program where he's allowed to be out of his cell and outside of solitary confinement because he's considered a non-threat to anyone, that guy who couldn't have handled the security of traveling to the Capitol is insane. And it's not a good faith argument.
So Robert is part of this experimental program at the...
Well, he was.
That was my question. Yeah. If he is still part of the program that allowed them to be unshackled and whatever, and be able to interact with each other, about a dozen of these inmates.
Yes, and this was instituted, it's almost 2 years ago now. I think a little over 18 months. He was selected to be one of the 12 where they would try this, and it's been a big success. The officers are very happy with it. Certainly the inmates have been so grateful for this added little bit of humanity. But that, that Robert is among that handful who was selected for this tells you how the prison sees him, which is as a person who is trustworthy.
Right. And he was allowed to be unshackled when he met with state lawmakers last year when they had a prayer circle. That also tells you that.
Right. And it was, it was TDCJ brass who made that call and allowed him to meet and pray with these lawmakers unshackled, which they would never do if they had any hesitation, any concern about him. And in fact, they don't, because they know him to be a gentle and humble man.
But now he is no longer in that experimental program where you can be unshackled and you can meet with other inmates?
Right. Once you have an execution date, you are removed from wherever your cell is and placed on what's called death watch, where you're under 24-hour surveillance. You have far greater restrictions. And so obviously he's no longer in the group recreation program because he had to be moved to this. It's like super intense solitary confinement.
So last year, Robert Robertson's death date was October 17th. This year, it's on October 16th. So it would be one day less than a year when they attempted to execute him last. Should we read anything into that?
It's hard not to think someone's trying to, tell a story here. And it's not a story, again, that seems to have anything to do with justice or fairness or due process.
It's a flex, by these people in power.
I can't get inside people's heads because I suspect there's politics. I don't see how it's good politics. I don't see any Texan saying, I'm all for executing people who might be innocent. That is not a political strategy that makes sense to me. But it is something that has to do with ending the inquiry and trying to, claim victory at the expense of, of getting at the truth.
During his last attempt of being executed, October 17th of 2024, there was a preponderance of evidence that would make anyone think that he did not commit a crime, that he was innocent. There was a lot of evidence that made us think that the state of Texas was preparing to execute an innocent man. And now there is even more evidence. Is that true?
That is absolutely true. I mean, with the new filing in February, among the new evidence was an expert report from Dr. Michael LaPosada. This is a very well-respected expert in bleeding disorders who taught at Harvard Medical School, is now the head of the pathology department at UTMB, and he absolutely believes that the minor bruises and the internal bleeding observed in Nikki were not caused by blunt force or shaking or any kind of abuse, but because she had a clotting disorder, which you can see by looking at her, the results of blood tests done in the hospital, and that this is a common byproduct of an advanced infection, i.e. her pneumonia, which had not been diagnosed and was progressing to the point of septic shock. So what they see by the time of autopsy are effects on her poor little body that were caused by her, a natural disease. Leading expert weighing in, adding to the other medical experts, along with a statement from 10 independent pathologists who are not affiliated with the case, were not paid by anybody, who looked at the context of the autopsy and found numerous errors, omissions, poor practices that suggest this is just a totally unreliable bit of work product. And yet the medical examiner who did this, you know, fly-by autopsy, the morning that she received Nikki, she was told the father had already been arrested. She was told there had already been this shaken baby diagnosis. She didn't even wait for her own test results to reach a conclusion. That is not the foundation for any kind of legitimate death sentence, let alone a conviction of any kind.
So you are not asking for Robert Robertson to be declared innocent and released and, you know, allowed out of prison. What are you asking for?
We are asking, we feel like we've more than met the Herculean burden of actual innocence, but the more practical solution is simply to grant habeas relief in the form of a new trial. And if the state is confident in its case, and if the state's case were anything like some of the propaganda that's been disseminated, they wouldn't have any trouble obtaining another conviction. But the fact is, the case is not what they say it is. And we try the case in an unbiased form, we would easily get an acquittal. And that's all we're asking, a chance to give Robert one fair trial. He's never had that.
So you want a new trial, a fair trial, for Robert Robertson, and is that something that the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals can grant you?
Absolutely. I mean, they are the only ones that have the power to grant that.
And they are looking at this case right now?
They have been looking at it, presumably since it was filed again in February with the new evidence, and one hopes that they will now take up this emergency motion and the execution so that they can continue to deliberate and take as much time as they need to get it right.
Gretchen Swin is the lead attorney for Robert Robertson, who is set to be executed in Texas on October 16th. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. You can find us wherever you get cool podcasts, and tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.